So our topic over these few weeks is the Brahma Viharas. And Kevin gave us an introduction to the Brahma Viharas last week and talked in detail about metta, or loving kindness. And just as a reminder, the Brahma Viharas are the divine abodes. There's four of them, and they are loving kindness, compassion, sympathetic joy, and equanimity. So tonight we'll be talking about compassion. And before I start in on this talk, I just want to say from the practice we just did, maybe just taking a moment to notice for yourself how that felt there at the end, the little guided section, calling someone to mind who was suffering, offering them the wishes to be free of suffering, or that you care about their pain. How did that feel for you? And there's no right or wrong answer. It's just a kind of a registering or a knowing how that went for you. And we can bring that back up again in the question and answer section if we want to. But just to notice for yourself how that was. So on the topic of compassion, just like Kevin talked about loving kindness, compassion is something that the Buddha taught us to cultivate and develop. It's one of these four qualities of the heart that he felt were skillful and wise for us, and that he taught them for the benefit of our own well-being and for the well-being of others. And they're described as a place to dwell, an abiding place or a state. Sometimes a little bit hard to find the right words exactly to talk about them. But as we go through, I think you'll get the sense of how we're supposed to be mentally directing our minds to these states. One of the interpreters of the suttas described these states as a psychological abiding place of the spiritually developed. So it's part of our development. We want to get to the place where our mind is dwelling in these states. And one of the interpreters, translators, talks about how the mind is supposed to use this as a constant dwelling place where we feel at home. And they should not be a place we merely visit for rare or short periods of time. So to achieve these states and to have our minds be in these states all the time, the Buddha teaches us to infuse or saturate the mind with these states through both our daily conduct and through meditation practices. And so by practicing these in our regular daily life or through special meditations and inclining the mind towards these states, we will experience an expansive happiness of mind. The Brahma Viharas are considered the right or ideal way of conduct towards living beings. And I want to quote a little bit from the teachings on this. They are the answer to all situations arising from social contact. They are great removers of tension, the great peacemakers in social conflict, and the great healers of wounds suffered in the struggle for existence. Developing these states allows us to develop a boundless heart. The Buddha taught that these wholesome qualities create a fullness of heart. He said that the monks who are practicing this will be freed from covetousness, freed from malevolence, not bewildered, self-possessed and concentrated, with hearts possessed of loving kindness, friendliness, compassion, joy, equanimity. They abide with a heart immeasurable, grown great, boundless, free from enmity, and untroubled. He goes on to say also that the practitioners would then come to know that formerly This heart of mine was confined. It was not made to grow. But now my heart is boundless, well made to grow. So translators tell us that this idea of well made to grow, that phrase, refers to the fact that our mind has the ability to develop these sublime states. So the Buddha is pointing the way for us. He's teaching these things to explain that with practice, we can attain these states. So I don't know about you, but when I hear something like the boundless heart, it feels a little far away for me. I'm not quite sure I can get there. It feels kind of big and maybe far off, and I'm not even sure, will I ever get there? And of course, we can't know whether we're going to get there slowly, or maybe someday we're going to have some significant advances in our practice. These are things we don't actually know. And so I just remind myself that the Buddha is pointing the way, and that if I approach my practice with intention and diligently, and I do my practices, that I do actually see some progress for myself a little bit at a time. At least that's how it's been for me. So I don't have to worry too much about if I can ever attain a boundless heart, which sounds so lovely, but I'm not, you know, I have my doubts, I guess. But that if I just apply myself and listen to the teachings and try to see if the teachings work for me by practicing them, then little by little, I can get there. And step by step, I will make progress. And I do know that from my own practice. Over time, I have seen that I have developed more patience, and I have been able to quiet my mind somewhat. And I have had some progress. So maybe someday I will have a boundless heart as well. So tonight, we're focused on compassion. It's the Pali word for it is karuna. And it's characterized by the wish to help alleviate suffering in others. And so it's the feeling we get when we see others are suffering, or maybe that they've fallen on hard times, and we have a desire to help them. Compassion, as the Buddha taught it, has a sense of action to it. So we're not complacent when we are faced with others' suffering. When we see that pain or difficulty or helplessness, our heart responds with the wish to help. And there's people today that study emotions, researchers that are looking at all kinds of different emotions. And compassion is similarly defined by these researchers as that feeling that arises when you're confronted with another's suffering and feel motivated to relieve that suffering. It differs a little bit from empathy, which refers generally to our ability to take the perspective of another person and feel the emotions of another person. But with compassion, it's when those feelings and thoughts also include that desire to help. And the Buddha taught all of this 2,600 years ago, a long, long time ago. But today we get to learn about the intersection of this sort of meditation practice that the Buddha taught with Western science. And the advances that have come about in neuroscience are allowing us to study the brain and see what goes on in the brain when we engage in these meditation practices. So researchers are looking at a whole set of positive emotions, things like kindness and gratitude and empathy and compassion. And some of them are studying the biological basis of compassion, suggesting that it has a deep evolutionary purpose, that perhaps compassion was actually favored as we evolved because it helped us to survive. The research that looks at compassion now shows that when we feel compassion, our heart rate slows down, we secrete the bonding hormone oxytocin, and regions of the brain that are linked to empathy, caregiving, and feelings of pleasure light up, which often results in our wanting to approach and care for other people. So how do we intentionally work with compassion? When we recognize that thought of wanting to help someone, when we have that sort of movement towards helping, it's really important to take notice of what's present. We may notice, as we're aware of another's suffering, a sort of movement of the heart, like a stirring within us. Sometimes people talk about it as a quivering of the heart. And there is actually a basis in the body for this. And it has to do with what I just referred to in terms of what scientists see in the brain and parts of the brain that are lighting up. But it also has to do with the vagus nerve, which is a nerve that runs through the body along the spine from the base of the skull all the way down into the intestines. And the vagus nerve is sending us signals all the time. And so part of that signaling is that sense of movement or stirring that we feel we want to take action and help others. So this is the time to stay present and intentionally open the heart. The Buddha taught us in terms of compassion to notice how compassion allows us to feel another's pain, but importantly, to not give way to pity or grief or other feelings of overwhelm in reaction to this. So when we react to an experience, we tend to lose our connection to that experience, our connection to our body, and we get lost in the storyline of our thinking mind, right, who wants to figure out what we can do. So when we see someone suffering or we hear about that or we read about that, it's important to notice what is our direct experience. Watch that stirring of the heart and then be careful about any storyline that begins to build about that. Stay connected with just that inclination, that desire to help, which is that compassion, without building the story. Particularly, the Buddha taught us to avoid specific things. The first was to avoid feeling pity for others. That pity usually comes from a place where we're somewhat distanced from others, as if I'm in a good place and that poor person there is having trouble. So we want to, when you're in that mindset, you're disconnected from the understanding of our shared suffering. The second area was to be careful about feeling sorry for ourselves. So that would be like self-pity. That feeling that we get sort of, woe is me, or why me? Why is this happening to me? When we're narrowed down into that kind of constricted view of ourself, as if we're different from others, again, we're not connected to the sense of shared suffering. We know and we can recognize when we stay connected that people are always suffering. There's suffering going on all over the world. And so if something happens to me, like, if I twist my ankle, and I could easily just feel like, well, why is this happening to me? And so disappointed, and it's only me and I'm suffering. I could go into that self-pity place, or I could remind myself that on a planet that has billions of people, every day somebody's twisting their ankle. So there's somebody stepping off a curb wrong and twisting their ankle, or there's somebody outdoors working in a farm or a field that's twisting their ankle. And so to connect with that greater sense of other humans that are also experiencing suffering, I'm not the only one who has a twisted ankle. It's okay if I want to recognize that maybe I feel pain with a twisted ankle, or I'm disappointed that I twisted my ankle because maybe it doesn't allow me to do something that I had planned to do. Recognizing that is totally fine, but not letting myself get lost in that sort of self-pity feeling about why me. And I can offer to myself, may I and others who have twisted their ankle heal quickly. And that's a connecting way and not getting lost in self-pity. The third thing that the Buddha warned against was feeling too much grief. That grief can have kind of a depressing effect on us, and it can make us almost want to push away from the suffering, right? Like that's too much for me. That's overwhelming to me. And if we're overwhelmed by grief or that heaviness of heart when faced with suffering, that's not the compassionate mind that the Buddha is talking about. In fact, grief and sorrow are considered the near enemy of compassion. So you may remember last week Kevin introduced that idea that each of the Brahma Viharas has a near enemy and a far enemy. And so grief and sorrow are the near enemies of compassion. And I'll just mention briefly, the far enemy of compassion is cruelty. So cruelty being the wish to harm or hurt or be cruel to someone, that can happen physically, but it can also happen through our speech. Like if we make a cutting remark to someone or we say something that's putting them down, that's being cruel with our speech. So we want to make sure that as we practice our compassion, that we're careful with any of the ways that we might potentially slip into cruelty. And as we practice more and more compassion, that tendency will subside. But going back to the near enemy of grief and overwhelm, often when we see suffering, especially things on a broad scale, like the devastation that can come about from tornadoes or earthquakes or major tragedies like that, we can be overwhelmed by it. I certainly know how that feels, and so it is easy to want to sort of turn away from it because it feels so big. And we want to try to work through that by not, one of the ways that we sometimes turn away from it, when I say turn away from it, I'm meaning like turn away from that feeling of just staying with that, like recognizing that suffering and the scope of that and the feeling that comes up in us when we recognize that. We kind of want to move away from that feeling because it's uncomfortable. So one of the ways we do that is to kind of jump to, how can I help? What can I do to fix that? How much money should I send to that relief agency? We go to that part of our thinking mind rather than staying with that feeling that we have, that compassionate reaching out of, oh, that suffering. I see that suffering that those people are having. So the jumping to that feeling, the thinking mind, actually is shortcutting our ability to develop this boundless compassion that the Buddha teaches about, where we're not overtaken or dragged down by those feelings of overwhelm, but we rather use it as an opportunity to further break open our hearts, to deeply recognize there is this suffering. And actually, we're all in the same boat. So we need to connect to the heart first, that compassion is grounded in the truth of the way things are. Facing what is real, we connect to the heart rather than leaping to that thinking mind or the fix-it mind. As the Buddha taught it, cultivating this quality of compassion, we connect with the heart when we recognize suffering, and we will come naturally to wish, may all people be free from suffering. It may seem a little bit counterintuitive to lean into that feeling, that uncomfortable feeling, and stay with that feeling, but really facing it does open our heart wider. When the heart is drawn towards this wide, all-encompassing boundlessness, may all people be free of suffering. It's not dragged down by the suffering. Rather, it is uplifted. And the Buddha instructed us that this is very important to recognize, this quality of the heart that can stay more buoyant and boundless. And we have to practice that. The thing that supports this mind of expansive boundlessness, boundless compassion, is our understanding of the first noble truth. There is suffering. Pain and suffering in life may be difficult to open up to, but it's real. And being with what's real is part of being a seeker on the path of truth. We develop a mind that holds compassion at all times, not just in the face of a suffering event or tragedy, but at all times because we know there is suffering always. We may not feel like we're suffering at a particular point in time. We might feel like we're content or we're happy or we're peaceful. And yet we still hold the knowledge that there is suffering all around. And others are suffering. And it's possible that just around the corner, there may be some more suffering for us, because we know the noble truth of suffering. We know that birth and aging and illness and death create suffering. We know that being separated from those we love creates suffering. We know that enduring things that we dislike creates suffering. And we know that clinging to people, clinging to ideas, clinging to things creates suffering for us. Things don't always go our way, and our bodies break down, and we can't control other people, and possessions fall apart or get stolen. Hard things happen to us, and we get set back. Understanding that we suffer connects us to others' suffering, and it becomes not just my suffering or that person's suffering or your suffering, but it becomes our suffering. Our common humanity includes suffering. And seeing this, then it's natural to respond with compassion for ourselves and for others. So I want to offer a couple of quotes from teachers. The first one is from Yanggi Mingyur Rinpoche, who says, "If we could see the whole truth of any situation, our only response would be one of compassion." If we could see the whole truth of any situation, our only response would be one of compassion. And Pema Chodron, who's a Buddhist nun who some people know because she's written some books that people have enjoyed reading, she says, "Compassion becomes real when we recognize our shared humanity." So with practice, we see that opening up that to that more expansive view of suffering is actually freeing. It takes us out of our own narrow, constricted, ego-driven view of my suffering dragging me down to an understanding that I can open my heart to see my shared human experience. I'm not alone in my suffering. Others suffer too. And so compassion widens our view and uplifts our heart from that narrow, constricted place. So I want to just end with just restating that the Buddha taught us to approach this practice, and this is true of all four of the Brahma Viharas. This instruction goes across all four of them, that we should approach this through both practical conduct, our sort of everyday lives, as well as methodical meditation. So in the practical conduct, how we live our everyday lives, we can direct our thoughts to these states. We can direct our thoughts to loving kindness. We can direct our thoughts to compassion. And that, particularly in terms of compassion, that helps us, the Buddha taught it, helps us to harbor less resentment, less tension, less irritability. And that's a good thing in sort of our daily lives. We want to harbor less resentment and tension and irritability. But interestingly, he also pointed out that it's important to do that in our daily conduct, because in subtle ways, that enters into our meditation practice. And it shows up as restlessness, as distracted mind. So if we are in our daily lives holding a grudge or feeling irritable and tense about something, or, you know, running something over again in our minds about how we've been wronged, that does show up in our meditation practice. I know it does for me sometimes if I'm really kind of working over something in my mind and I try to sit down and meditate, it's hard to settle my mind. It's harder to get quiet because that thing keeps coming back up for me in my mind, and I have to work with that in meditation. So the Buddha was saying, this is good for just practical conduct of our everyday lives, but it's also important because it's going to allow us to have a more quiet and calm meditation practice. The second strategy that he teaches us for these Brahma Viharas is methodical meditation, or very specific meditation. undertaking these meditations in order to achieve these sublime states. And Kevin introduced us to the basic framework of the meditation last week when he did the loving kindness meditation with us. It's the same for all four of the Brahma Viharas, that we offer the meditation first to ourselves. We think of ourselves, bring ourselves to mind. We offer these thoughts and wishes to ourselves. And then we move outward in circles from ourselves to people who are close to us, friends and family, loved ones, to people who we might not know very well at all, refer to them as strangers, to people who are more difficult, out further and further and further till we include all beings, that it's an all-inclusive practice, that no one is left out, that there's no discrimination, there's no exclusion. And we do this because we understand that just as I wish to live with a compassionate and open heart, just as I wish to recognize that I have suffering and pain and that I wish to not suffer, so too do others. So too does that person, and so too do you, and so too does every being that I can point to. So we can use the practice with compassion like we did at the end of our meditation this evening, where we call to mind someone who's suffering and we offer them to, you know, may they be free from suffering, may you be free from suffering, or offering the statement of, I care about your pain. So our hearts go through these sort of openings and closings as we encounter things in life. And sometimes we may feel really open and balanced, and other times we might feel more protected and kind of closed down. And we have these states that we can call upon at any time, whether it's loving kindness or compassion, or in the future we'll learn about joy and equanimity. That compassion is something that we carry with us all the time. And so we can always be grounding ourselves in what's real and offering ourselves either our compassion for ourselves or compassion for others. We can always be offering that kind of simple statement, may I and all beings be free from suffering. So when these things come up in our lives, we can just take a moment and stay present and face what's real and offer ourselves that kind of compassion and offer that compassion out to others. So I want to end with a quote from the Buddha. He said, may compassion arise in our hearts, compassion that is sublime nobility of heart and intellect, which knows, understands, and is ready to help. Compassion that is strength and gives strength. This is the highest compassion. So thank you for your attention and sitting for so long. And let's just sit for 1 minute and kind of let that settle in before we open it up for some questions and answers.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.